Hello, I'm John Kelly, and this is a podcast of Mystery Train. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than in the original programme. Mystery Train hits the rails Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on RTE Lyric FM. Massive Attack, Karma Coma, and this is Mystery Train on RTE Lyric FM. So on a Sunday night, what's on your turntable? Tonight's guest is Kevin Barry. Kevin is a writer. He's the author of There Are Little Kingdoms, City of Bohan, which won the 2013, he'll correct me in a minute, International Impact Award. Dark Lies the Island, Beetle Bone, which won the Goldsmith Prize in 2015. He's also, as I said earlier, a playwright, a lake swimmer. He's often spotted on the roads of Sligo, composing alarming scenarios while on his velocipede. That's what you do, Kevin, basically, isn't it?
You left out the most important part of my CV there, which is that I come from a long line of train people.
Do you really?
I do. Wagon makers.
Is that true?
In Limerick, we built all the trains, my people. I would say even on the father's side, I would say even probably laid the tracks into Limerick back in the day.
Never knew that.
With the sweat rolling down our backs. Yeah.
Did you ever work on the railroad?
I didn't. I manual labour, I did an hour and a half on a building site in the late 80s.
Yeah, it shows.
In London, I was told to go home by the foreman. He took one look at me with a wheelbarrow and some sand and said, look, you know, this isn't for you, kid.
Any chance of a stop?
Yeah.
So, Kevin, any news? I haven't seen you in a long time. So,
I've been kind of keeping close to the barracks, mostly in the summer.
By the barracks, we should clarify. This is your beautiful home in Sligo,
in County Sligo, and NLRIC barracks. There's a film starting tomorrow. Would you believe, on Monday morning, based on the short stories called "Dark Lies the Island"?
A movie film
directed by Ian Fitzgibbon.
This must be news because. Well, certainly I haven't heard this before.
There you are. Yeah, no, so that's what I've been up to all summer, is the last kind of drafts and stuff on that. It's like it's Blue Velvet meets Wings of Desire in Roscommon.
Perfect.
Essentially.
Well, I'll stand in line to see that, sure.
They'll be around the block.
But Dark Lies the Island, Kevin, is a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
So how does that become a movie?
I took a load of little... they're almost kind of accidental characters, really, in some of the stories. And I put them all in a single small Roscommon town, an imaginary Roscommon town, and ran them into each other and tried to see what would happen. We have great people in it. Pat Short is going to be in it, and Tommy Tiernan, and Peter Coonan from Love Hate, and Charlie Murphy. So it's going to be a...
That'll work.
Pure filth and very profane and lots of demented stuff going on. But so I'm happy about that.
You must be happy, because I think it must be a great thing for a writer to see their work, you know, recreated in some other way as a movie or a play or whatever. So, and I know you've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, and it's it takes a long time and lots of drafts and getting the money together.
And of course,
I did. I wrote the screenplay. Yeah, so it's been a while in the works, but it's and the great thing is it'll probably get me run out of Roscommon and Sligo area, I'd say, which is fantastic. They'll have to run me out after this, you know. So that's another benefit to it.
What have you any idea when this might appear?
I guess next year sometime. I don't know exactly how it works with all the sort of post-production and all that, but I'd imagine probably about a year's time or something.
And
like
is there
that.
A title? Dark Lies
it's
the Island.
It's Dark Lies the Island, yeah.
Well, congratulations, Kevin.
Thanks very much.
I'm glad. I know how difficult it can be to get these things off the ground, and also to retain some kind of control over what happens.
But you see, it's the wagon maker blood in me from the CIE gone back over the time. I think it makes you kind of determined when you're laying tracks, you know, into the cities and into the towns. But I love trains. I could talk train puns for about an hour and a half non-stop.
Well, we've
by
got
the way.
We've got 2 hours here.
Yeah, so,
so just
if I'm, keep if your I'm powder, going too far.
Keep your powder dry for a while. Yeah. Kevin, you're going to pick some music for us. First choice, you'll find no argument from me over this one.
Yeah, we'll start off fairly handy, I think, with Mr. Sly Stone and his family.
And that's Sly and the Family Stone. I haven't heard that in so long. That's the choice of Kevin Barry, who's with me tonight. Kevin is my guest on what's your turntable of a Sunday evening here on Mystery Train. Thanks for that call, Kevin. That's a good one.
I'm back in Galway in the early 90s, I'd say, listening to that. That would be one of those kind of 6 in the morning at a party.
It's been a long time since I've done that.
I was going to ask you actually, how are you getting on with your body clock now that you're back on the night shift?
I haven't quite worked out. I have to get up in the morning. That's the difference. Back in the day when
I thought you'd be crawling out of bed at 4 in the day now.
No, I'm not. No, I'm getting
couple
up.
A couple of raw eggs.
Getting up at the normal time. And raw eggs, yes, but normal time. You see, in the old days when I used to do nighttime programmes, I could go out afterwards and then sleep till lunchtime. But, you know, life changes.
And there you are.
And now I can't do that. So I have to get up. Anyway. So I have to work out what... I mean, the danger is that you work all day long.
Yeah.
So I've got a bit like yourself, probably. You have to figure in a part of the day where I'm going, right, I'm now not working.
I'm always on, man. I never stop, you know. Well, it might look like I'm not doing much.
I notice you're taking notes now, actually, as we sit here. You mentioned Galway there, Kevin. But when you were growing up, in where exactly?
I grew up in Limerick.
Now be specific.
In Limerick City.
Right.
But I guess around early 90s, it was the old dance music came in.
Yeah.
And there wasn't an awful lot going on in Limerick. There was more in kind of in Cork and Galway that we'd be going up and down to club nights in, really. This was when the kind of Dáil House music came in, you know. I had a very snobby period where I didn't listen to a guitar for about 5 years, where it had to be kind of deep house.
Will we have some of that later?
There'd be some kind of stuff like that coming in a while. But it's, I think I first kind of got into all that stuff in kind of late 80s, going to London for a summer as a kind of a teenager, 18 and 19. And, you know, you're kind of searching for something new in music without realising it.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of old before our time with our Leonard Cohen records and Neil Young records, and then seeing all these kids around London, summer of 88 kind of a thing, with bowl haircuts and orange jeans and their eyes outside their heads, listening to Acid House. And what the hell is Acid House? And of course you get into it in the course of 24 hours at that age, or to something totally new.
Everything it went before is gone.
Gone out the window, and I will never listen to that again. Yeah. So it's and eventually started organising kind of house nights in Limerick, clubs and pubs and stuff, and raves out in the middle of fields and Clare and things like that. But it's strange. It's a lot of that house music. I kind of never really listened to so much at home now because it's very much of its time.
And it's also lucky though. You landed in the middle of that scene. If you weren't part of it, it was just this mysterious thing that was happening elsewhere,
right?
And didn't make a lot of sense, because it didn't make sense unless you were in it.
Mm.
And the music. Yeah. The music, a lot of it holds up really well, though.
A lot of it does. And actually, in a while, actually, the stuff I do still listen to for that time tends to be the kind of real minimal, sort of strange techno kind of things that were coming from Detroit in the late 80s and early 90s, which really holds up well.
Yeah.
And which you can listen to in kind of handsome middle age on your couch at home. Whereas a lot of the kind of house 12 inches that I have at home now wouldn't go on the turntable.
Well, a lot of them were produced in a hurry to hit the market.
Oh, absolutely.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah. And
whereas the Detroit guys were pioneers and experimenters and serious people. Anyway. Your next choice, whoever, has nothing to do with that whatsoever.
No, we're going to West Cork with Miss Nina Simone of Baltimore County, Cork.
Thank you. And as Nina Simone, Dr. Nina Simone, with a Randy Newman song called Baltimore, choice of Kevin Barry. You like Nina, Kevin?
I do, yeah.
She's something special.
She's a kind of, she's everybody's ideal scary granny, really, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah,
that, that you'd love to have in the corner.
It's just occurring to me now as you say that, when you choose your musicians or you find musicians that you like, do they tend to be characters like Nina Simone, if you know what I mean? Because the sort of characters you put in your books are not regular folks.
Well, I'm actually looking down some of the things I've brought in tonight, yeah, and there seems to be some sort of fairly outsized personalities in the room with us at all. All right, but that comes through, I guess, doesn't it, in the music, you know, and it's what you're after. We're going into another fairly outsized...
A complicated man.
A very complicated... a man with baggage, Mr. Miles Davis. We're going to hear something from Sketches of Spain, which is probably my most played CD in the shed where I work in County Sligo.
See, that's interesting, because Miles Davis, I think if you asked... People are into Miles. The most played album, I would have thought, would be Kind of Blue.
Right? Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's got this dynamic, which doesn't... It's a mood album, you know, it doesn't change too much. And I suspect when you're writing music with lots of fancy dynamics, isn't easy. I mean, you can't write with classical music on because it's loud one minute and quiet the next. But it's something that's steady.
Yeah, it's a very complicated business, actually, what you can and can't write, I find. And sometimes I go through periods where I don't listen to anything. If I'm very much into my own rhythms or whatever is going on the page. But it's this just Sketches of Spain always works for me. And I also love, since the late 90s, I've been snaking off to Spain whenever I can in the winter when a kind of grey belly of cloud comes down on top of you in the west of Ireland, you know, and you go, oh God, Jesus, there's months of this to come yet. So I've always been gone off since about 98 or 99. I've gone off nearly every winter for a few weeks. Always kind of writing missions, you know, trying to work on something. And I'd always bring Sketches of Spain with me as well.
And of course, this album is, you know, big orchestral arrangements on it as well. It's not a straight ahead jazz album by any means.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in him actually when he's kind of taking two worlds and letting them kind of collide a little bit, you know. And when he's rubbing up the genres against each other and seeing what happens.
Okay, so let's hear Will o' the Wisp from Sketches of Spain, Miles Davis. Scratch Perry, choice of Kevin Barry, is with me tonight on Mystery Train. Kevin, I've known for a long time that you like your reggae and your dub reggae in particular. On your travels, you lived in different places and you lived in England for a while too. When you were in London, did you get close to that particular scene?
I started listening to an awful lot of dub reggae in my Cork City period, because Cork has always been one of the great reggae capitals of the universe.
Sorry, say that again.
Cork has always been one of the dub reggae capitals of the
universe. I thought that's what you said.
Specifically around the Union Quay area of the city.
Right.
There was three pubs in a row and they'd all play dub reggae all night. But yeah, in London I used to go to things in the Hackney Empire, African Head Charge and all that kind of stuff. As a Limerick man though, I cannot leave the evening pass without a bit of Bob Marley, as we call him. When I was a kid in secondary school in Limerick, like the big musical legends were Bob Marley and UB40. I always remember there was this great guy, I can't remember his name, but he used to play in the pubs around Limerick, acoustic guitar, and he was essentially a kind of a Bob Marley tribute act, but he would do them all in a very Limerick accent, you know, so you'd have things like emancipate yourself from mental slavery and all this kind of business, and he was glorious. But we were talking about evil.
Oh, I wish we had some of that if we could play now.
Yeah, we were talking about evil spirits, the duppies infesting studios, so we better play Bob getting rid of the duppies with Duppy Conqueror.
Yes, me friend, them set me free. Yes, my friend. Me day a street of red. Yes, my friend. My friend.
Duppy Conqueror, Bob Marley there. Choice of Kevin Barry. Kevin, I often thought, you know, we were talking about Marley. He played in Ireland, of course, and I was I was just too young to go.
At Dalyman Park.
Yeah, and I really regret it. You see Eric Luke's photographs sometimes at the gig and you think, you know, it was, that must have been something to go to that. There was one guy in my class went, had the sense or the foresight to go ahead and do it, you know. Anyway, I would love to have seen Marley. Love to have. And then there's Marley Park in Dublin named after him.
That's very true.
Which is important as well. Now, you're going to stick with the reggae.
Yeah, just for one or two more, maybe. I was thinking we're going back to a Lee Scratch Perry production of Mr. Leroy Horsemouth Wallace. This is from a great anthology called Public Gestering that came out late 70s, I think. Now, you wouldn't see it around very much now, but it's, I mean, Lee Perry has always been very interested in the Jamaican tradition of gestering and kind of that satirical anarchic strain that goes through Jamaican kind of cultural life and political life.
Now, by gesturing, explain what that is.
Gesturing is, it's kind of acting the goat, we'd call it over here, but in a kind of a very kind of a in a kind of formalized way. You would have through little Jamaican villages gesturers going around and making up sort of satirical songs on the spur of the moment about, you know, characters in the town or in the village or so forth. So it's this is from a period where he was kind of involved with recording a lot of this kind of stuff and trying to get him into the studio and trying to round them all up with nets. I don't know much about this guy Horsemouth Wallace.
It's kind of odd because when you said you were going to play this, I started hooking through my own reggae stuff, and a lot of that reggae stuff I have, strange, it seems to be compilations. You pick up lots of compilations, right? And there was only one track by this guy. And it's not this one, but I only had
one.
Where
is he now? Oh, he has a great name, Horsemouth.
Horsemouth.
John Horsemouth Kelly presents. Mm. I think it could be the way to go.
Well, there are variations on that.
Yeah, but this is especially. I think it feels to me like one of those really classic Lee Perry productions, I think.
Okay, here he comes, Herb Vender.
Right now, I'm an Irish like Mr. Myrie, who generally sits on its veranda reading his diary. Officially, yeah, for this stuff on the Cali, it's officially, say.
Herb Vender. You're right, actually, the reggae guys had some great names. He was Horsemouth.
Yeah.
Right. Then there was Aston Family Man Barrett.
Oh, I came across him some anthology or other as well, yeah. It's time we started giving ourselves proper handles.
Proper ones.
Really, isn't
it? No, there was a blues singer once, and he came to Ireland, and I spent a bit of time with him, and he was called Clarence Gitmouth Brown.
Wow.
Gitmouth. Yeah. And there was a friend of mine walked into the dressing room, and she said to him, "Hey, what about you, Gitmouth?" And it seemed insulting, but he was quite happy with it. What was the other one? Well, Satchmo, he was Satchel Mouth. Oh, yeah, that's where Satchmo came from. Kevin, you're not paying attention
for
to me.
For Manamouth.
Kevin,
for
you're not paying
Mouth
attention
Kelly
to me now. No, you're looking at your CD.
I've gone drifting back
into CDs.
Drifting through time, and I'm remembering my ska boy phase, which was, of course, the ska revival, early 80s with the Specials and all that.
You're trying
that
to run the show now, aren't
I
you?
I kind of am. Yeah. Yeah, but it's. listen, you've been doing a great job, John, but after the first week,
didn't last very long.
I did have that ska revival phase, and it led me in kind of subsequent years to look at some of the original kind of ska stuff.
The ska thing, I remember when that ska revival happened, and you know, you're talking about when guys were wearing those fishtail coats and all that stuff. Did you do that?
I was very natty young ska boy.
But there was this awful thing that happened then, is that because that was tied up with Two Tone and all that. Mm. The thing was, if you're into rock music, I mean, if you liked Thin Lizzy, for instance, you weren't allowed to like the other, and those guys hated us because we still like Led Zeppelin kind of thing.
There was
a
kind of a pop, dance and rock divide, wasn't there? Yeah. Yeah. And I would have probably be always, my thing was kind of pop music, you know, ecstatic kind of 3-minute singles and things like that. I suppose people like Jam kind of bridge those two worlds a bit. But you went back
and started sussing out who these ska acts actually were.
And you know,
were.
Petrol stations are great for finding these anthologies, you know,
right,
at sort of 2 in the morning, you pull in somewhere in kind of Mullingar or something, and you find, and you know, you're sick of whatever you're listening to in the car, and you see then kind of this kind of 36 Scatolite kind of favourites. And
Kim, earlier on you said that Cork was the reggae capital of Europe or something.
Ska's more Mullingar kind
of. And now you're telling me Mullingar petrol stations. Yeah.
What would the Fermanagh scene be? I'm up, but I can't make it out.
Music just anyway damp.
Yeah. It's a lovely place. we go up buying wine. We go across the border to get the cheap wine.
Not anymore, you won't.
Yeah. Putting a stop to that fairly lively.
Anyway. Let's play some ska music. Yeah, but the people will know this as a hit for Blondie.
Yeah.
But this is the original. In fact, in the past I've said things like this is the original, then you find actually there might even be another one before that, but this is for all intents and purposes the original. I'd say, Kevin, that's another first for lyric there, Blondie.
Yeah.
Great.
You know what's great about Blondie, actually, is when you listen to things like that, it's that thing with two different scenes colliding. So you have kind of downtown new wave, late 70s New York, running into the kind of Giorgio Moroder gay disco kind of things that are coming out. And it's kind of really, in some ways, a bit cheesy and shonky, but it's, you know, glorious, ecstatic pop music.
And, of course, when they made that record in particular, I mean, Parallel Lines, but that particular track, Hard at Last, this was what, 78? They recorded it in 77. The album came out in 78. And a lot of people from the first of the scenes you're talking about, CBGBs and all that, thought this was a total sellout.
Yeah.
Disco? Yeah. Seriously? Disco?
And you'd still get that. People saying, oh, you know, I know they sold out in certain November 77 kind of a thing.
But then it took a while for the rest of us to catch up on how good disco was. Because again, it was a scene, if you weren't in the middle of it, you didn't know how good it was. We were getting kind of a version of it on Top of the Pops, but it wasn't actually the best of it by any means.
Yeah,
you know?
And then I didn't bring any in actually, but I love some of those kind of mad baroque kind of disco productions.
Yeah, the production of them's extraordinary.
Time as well, you know, which has survived, I guess, through the decades in different forms.
And Debbie Harry herself, or Deborah Harry, is a great, great jazz singer. You know, she does some great stuff, and they're great musicians. And I always loved that. 78, it was just right on cue for me when she appeared. Yeah. I mean, I never got over it.
Yeah, you were four years old.
No. Yeah. Deborah Harry looking out of your television singing that was just
astonishing. We were watching a documentary about her the other night, and what's great is she's so unstyled and ungroomed looking compared to the kind of
in a bin liner
princesses now, you know, and kind of torn t-shirts.
And she couldn't dance to save her life. That's the only thing. Only for that.
Depends, you know. Depends what you mean by dance.
Only if she'd been able to dance, I think we'd have been an item. But other than that, something. Anyway, the Blondie stuff still stands up. Before that, Paragons and The Tide is High.
What an amazing link we did there with those two.
I thought
two
that
tracks.
Was incredible, yeah. I think, Kevin, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. This is Mystery Train on RTE Lyric FM. This Sunday night special, my guest is Kevin Barry. Kevin's been picking the music so far. We've had all sorts. And now we're definitely having all sorts because we're going to come back to someone who may have been a hero to a lot of us at some point in our lives. Liam Clancy.
Yeah, I think actually I remember when I was a small child in Limerick in the 1970s, I had a record, the lent to your arm at the accident and emergency in the Limerick Regional Hospital. I was always falling off things. I was always falling off tables and chairs. Usually I'd stand up on a table to sing a song and I would inevitably get so carried away I'd fall off and slap my head open.
Feel free, by the way.
I had a small tumble there a while ago outside. But I'd, 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 Usually be it would be a Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem.
What did you sing? What was your party piece?
Oh, listen, no, stop. I'll
go on.
I'm like a tormented crow.
What was your party? No, don't sing it. I'll just ask you what your party piece was.
I think I might have done.
We'll get you back at Christmas for that.
I might have done Waltz and Matilda a bit.
Really? Yeah.
I might have done a bit of that.
That was a long listen for your audience.
Along with a bit of Bay City Rollers.
Very good.
And whatever you have in your
I think you should go on the road.
Absolutely.
Clancy, did you ever meet Liam, did you?
No, I didn't.
He was a great man to interview and to talk to because the stories were just... And the stories, of course, for me, were fascinating because they were about Bob Dylan and that whole scene, you know?
It's weird. This one that we're going to listen to, I was away in the winter. I was in Boston for a few months, like many an Irish immigrant before me, walking around in the snow and a bit dark and snowy. And I got an earworm for a few days and for some reason... I was listening to this over and over and over again, this particular song. I just love singers, you know, really good singers. He's just such an amazing velvet voice.
Dylan said he was the best ballad singer of all.
Oh yeah, you couldn't argue with it. I mean, there's no one comparable for this kind of thing, you know. And what a great song.
Dutchman's not the kind of man to keep his thumb jammed in the dam. I used to be a young man, and dear Mart remembers that for me.
Well, Kevin, I'll say some people didn't see
that
coming.
Is it that time of the night?
It's that time of the night, yeah. Well, Liam Clancy there, and you know...
Tears streaming
you say
down
that
our jaws.
That song came into your head, you don't know from where or from when, but it just got stuck again, and you probably hadn't heard it in a long time.
And you know
time.
What I'd have to say as well, if anyone wants a YouTube hole to fall into, Liam Clancy makes a great one.
A lot of stuff
you'd
there.
You'll be there for the night.
Well, I'll tell you, if you ever run into Bob Dylan, you don't know what to say. Just mention Liam and it'll be all right. So. It'll be okay.
That's what I'll do.
It'll be okay.
I have my intro now.
Yeah. So where do we go from there? Because as the man says, it's all folk music.
Yeah, kind of someone who might be a kindred spirit, I'd say, would be Will Oldham or whatever we're calling him, Bonnie Prince Billy or Palace Music or whatever. I have what I sometimes call my Bonnie Prince days at home in Sligo, where I wouldn't say I'm kind of down or depressed, but just in that kind of
you see a darkness,
sweet melancholy mood where nothing will do, really, only the body prints. So I think
is this Palace or Palace Brothers or Palace Songs?
Yeah. I think they were going as at this particular time.
All right, here it comes.
If you wait another day, I will wait a day. If you wait another day.
Yeah, Bonnie Prince Billy there, or Palace Songs in that case. And Agnes, Queen of Sorrow.
I saw an interesting thing actually about the Bonnie Prince recently. He's very happy in himself these days.
I'm glad to hear it.
He's after getting married to a young one. this is on telly.
I'll give him 6 weeks.
And he was doing a version of I See a Darkness, but it was all very jaunty with banjos.
Seriously, talking about YouTube, there's a video of him, that fast version of I See a Darkness. Well, see the video. He's dancing down the street.
I know, and you wouldn't be expecting it from him.
When Leonard Cohen came to Dublin first and played in Kilmainham, I sat down and Bonnie Prince was sitting right in front of me. Wow. And I didn't interrupt him when he was obviously at the feet of Leonard Cohen. But
boxing
there he was.
Out of Louisville, is that there right?
Is that where he is? I don't know.
Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky, yeah.
That's where Muhammad Ali came from.
It is.
But people, I think, you know, some people can get thrown by Bonnie Prince Billy because he's I don't know how you'd put it, he's kind of lax about singing and tune and things like that.
But
it's beautiful. And
so
the songs are extraordinary.
Songs,
yeah. You know, the songs are incredible.
So many great songs. And he's not afraid to kind of, there's no way, there's no polite way of saying it, or covering the same ground, over and over again. Yeah, but it's always like, the quality is always really high. And there's so many records out there, you know.
Well, that's the other side of it. It's very hard to keep track of.
Yeah.
Different incarnations and all the rest of it. But then, of course, somebody else does one of his songs and everybody notices. Like Johnny Cash's version of I See a Darkness.
Which is amazing. Yeah. I buy them all, though, whenever I see one of the many dozens appear.
It's hard to know, Kevin, where to go from Bonnie Prince sometimes. Tinder
sticks, we're kind of still on a vaguely kind of melancholy line, I suppose, with this. This reminds me very much of, you know, the way songs transport you to times and places. West Cork, the Lizard Festival in 96 or 97.
Yeah.
I remember I was kind of reviewing gigs at the time for the Examiner and the Irish Times and meeting this kind of weird German or Austrian guy in Cork one day, and he was saying, I'm organising big festival West Cork. I will have Nick Cave. I will have Patti Smith. I will have Lou Reed. And I was going, all right, yeah, grand. Yeah. I'll go out. And sure enough, you know, a few weeks later, there was Nick Cave out on a little raft playing for about 50 people, all the Boatman Call songs that were just out. Patti Smith showed up. That was the only time I've seen her live, actually.
I played that gig.
Did you? I don't remember you at it, man.
I know.
I remember Patti's.
I opened for John Martin.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, that was a strange night.
They can't take it away from you.
That was a very strange night.
But I remember very vividly the Tindersticks. Yeah. I don't think they get quite enough kind of recognition. I think they're an amazing pack of songwriters and players. This one, I think, is probably one of their more well-known tracks, but it really takes me back to that kind of wet, damp West Cork summer in the mid-1990s.
There are places I don't remember. There are times and days they mean nothing to me. I've been looking through some of the old pictures.
Traveling Light, that's Tindersticks. Stuart Staples there with the, we couldn't remember the name of the singer. Carla Torgerson is the
fine old chant,
the duet. Tindersticks. So Kevin, we're going to move on to Kevin Rowland.
We're going to Cross Malina.
Cross Malina, County Mayo.
I think since The Day came out, actually, Don't Stand Me Down has been probably my favourite record, my favourite long player.
This was their debut album.
That was the 85. The one we're going to hear is from the debut album, Young Soul Rebels. Kevin Rowland is a proper pop star, actually. And it's not the first thing you'd think to call him, but he was just, you know, just someone who always just stuck to his guns on everything. I loved the kind of way he was awkward squad.
Yeah.
Always. The great thing about when they were making the first record, I think he got into a period of intense physical fitness. And the story is that he would make the Midnight Runners actually go on a like 2 mile run around the studios, the perimeter.
Well, they used to go jogging as a band. They would go jogging.
Then bring that feeling.
And there was no drink, no drugs, no nothing. Very clean living, very serious stuff.
But I must say, if Don't Stand Me Down is my all time favorite, this is Young Soul Rebels must be one of the great debuts. And I think, is it Tell Me When My Light Turns Green? We're gonna go with.
Tell Me When My Light Turns Green, Dexy's Midnight Runners from the debut album, searching for the Young Soul Rebels. Kevin, that album, of course, was kind of shocking about it at the time. Not shocking, but it was wonderful. He was straight in the first song, singing about Brendan Behan and Edna O'Brien and all these people getting mentioned. It was kind of great. So he was you know, declaring his Irishness.
I remember buying it on a school tour to Wales, where they brought us to see Silver Mines in Snowdonia or something, and standing around looking into these holes in the ground thinking, Jesus, what's this? But I still have the vinyl and it still plays, you know, which is a great thing about that particular form.
And he is, you know, what you said earlier is true. He's one of the most committed artists I've ever encountered, ever.
I think he's like, he's clearly a unique and amazing singer, but as a live performer, he just is something really special. He's like, I think he's, and I don't say this lightly, but he's up there with James Brown or someone like that as a live performer. He's really mesmerizing, and he just really kind of fills a room, no matter what size the room.
A lot of it is full on commitment. There's no hanging back whatsoever. And he does things, you know, that people think are a bad, you know, a bad idea, like the last album.
Right.
And then eventually you start thinking, actually, this album's great.
You mean the Irish song?
Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. But, you know, he knew it was, and he just pushed on. And he didn't care that half the songs weren't Irish either.
Yeah.
Do you know that he put Joni Mitchell songs in there too?
And some of the awkward stuff he does, like that he had the great sort of period of commercial success with the Raggle Taggle Gypsy look and Come on Eileen, and then to come out in accountant's business suits with Don't Stand Me Down.
All very deliberate and all part of
and
the artistic plan.
And he released a 16-minute single, Tell Me What She's Like, when he actually had a perfect 3-minute single on that record. Listen to this, and no way am I releasing that.
Oh, everything.
I
everything
just love
is,
that kind of behaviour.
Everything is,
you know,
totally thought through as well, though. Everything, everything he wears, etc. But look, let's move on to another another Irish person and a set of Irish people in England. They didn't sing it, but well, actually, they did. And you would know more about John Lennon than most because of Beetlebone, a book that you wrote about Lennon, you know, buying the island out in the West.
Yeah, and actually, the great thing about it, I was years on that book, 3 or 4 years working on it. And the great thing about finishing it was that I was able to listen to the Beatles again in an unselfconscious way. Because when I was writing the book, I was constantly thinking, oh God, is it living up to this kind of stuff, you know? So it was really nice to be able to go back and play the White Album again. And of course, because that novel is about John Lennon, people ask me what's my favourite John Lennon track. And I think maybe because I'm also an accomplished insomniac as he was, that I'm So Tired from the White Album is my favourite.
I'm so tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, 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 I'm so tired, I don't...
Getting lost in that. I haven't heard that in a while. The White Album is a whole day's work, the White Album, you know? Two CDs worth.
I think it's far superior to Sgt. Pepper, but that's one of those arguments that
happiness is a
people
warm,
have.
Happiness is a warm gun, I think, is the finest Beatles track.
But
of the
people
lot.
Give out about certain songs that have been throwaway.
He's
like
ignoring
Savoy,
me again. I say things to him.
Mr. Kelly.
He's looking at the clock.
Just put another shovel of coal in the train.
Yeah.
Are we going to Revolver? Is that the plan?
There
has to be. You see, you have to have a Fab Macca.
Yeah, you have to have
a song.
Thumbs up.
And I love him. You know, you're supposed to, if you're a Lennon person, you're supposed to have this kind of anti-Paul thing going on, but I don't have that at all.
How do you, having written the book, having written Beetlebone, and explored Lennon maybe more than most people do, and you know, done
Scratch Perry
and
novel,
that's done a lot
something.
Of research on Lennon. How do you feel about him? Do you like him?
I like him more than I did at the start, I think.
Yeah.
And I kind of know a lot more about him now. Like, he was very thorny and difficult and tricky kind of personality, I think.
Yeah.
As well as being very charming and funny and all the rest of it. But he was complicated, you know. I think, I just think incontrovertibly a great artist. And it was very intense experience to be sort of trying to get into that mindset and world for a few years. It was nice to come out the far end of the tunnel and feel like I'd kind of got away with it to some degree.
More than that. Great book. Anyway, here's a track from Revolver, so just in case Mac is listening, we're not forgetting.
We're not neglecting him.
To lead a better life, I need my love to be here. Here. Making each day of the year. Changing my
level of perfection about that I'd say as any writer would try and strive to achieve. Extraordinary stuff there, here, there and everywhere. The Beatles from the Revolver album, the choice of Kevin Barry, who's my guest. We've time for probably about two more tracks.
We talked a bit about kind of the old kind of late 80s Detroit techno stuff. Which
I'll
is
save that. Save that one to the end.
A bit of a U-turn. We hang on to that one for a while. Yeah.
Save that one to the end because then we can
go to Waterford. I know where we'll go. County Waterford.
We can just slip out the back door.
We'll go to County Waterford.
Yeah.
Kate Bush. I've long been fanatical and obsessive about Kate Bush, and you can't be anything else if you're into Kate Bush. I love pretty much everything that she's ever turned out the door.
She was more confusing than Blondie for me, though, because I wasn't
confused.
No, but you were terrified of her. Yeah. A crazy woman. Yeah. And then the next thing you went, she's actually really beautiful. Yeah. So it was kind of a strange reaction. I wasn't paying any attention to her lyrics at the time, but I thought the music was extraordinary. I loved the music that she was making.
Yeah, and she was, I don't know, I was getting my tonsils out, I think. This is another hospital.
Have you got time
story.
For this one, haven't you?
Probably not, but I just remember having very, very warm feelings at the Limerick Regional Hospital whenever Army Dreamers would come on the hospital radio.
Very good. Okay, that's a whole other show. Army Dreamers, the choice of Kevin Barry from a Kate Bush album called Never Forever.
I'm getting the warm feeling again.
Good man. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
It's good of you to come in, Kevin, and it's great to, you know, put the work in and pick all those tracks for us and so on. It's good for me too to hear, you know, somebody else's music choices, and it injects a little bit into what I do and all that kind of thing.
And of course, you draw up a different 20 every day, wouldn't you?
But of course.
There are definitely things that I go back to again and again and again.
And again, just on the writing front, what music do you, we touched on this earlier. If you are sitting down to write, is there a type of music that you would put on in the background?
I often have kind of weird, kind of tinkly bomb, kind of electronica things going on, Mouse and Mars and Matt Moss.
Blip hop.
Yeah, it just has kind of a rhythm and doesn't have lyrics.
And do you think that...
Just a mood in the room and kind of an intensity or something. You
does
know?
That in any way, might be nonsense, is it, can it in any way infect the prose?
I think it can. I think it just creates this kind of frame in some way in the room, you know. Like I was saying earlier, sometimes I have to turn stuff off. I find that if I'm at a very early stage of something, a first draft of something, actually silence is often the best way to go. But then there are certain records that kind of almost get you through a story or a book as well, you know, that get you there.
But they won't write it for you, unfortunately. Yeah. I think Roddy Doyle told me once he listened to Steve Reich. And again, that's repetitive.
Yeah.
And no major shift in the volume or the dynamic of the thing.
I didn't have stuff on very low, just about there in the background, you know. I don't want to start whinging and giving out now at this time of the evening, but it's kind of, it's hard going to the desk in the morning when you're not in the mood for it, and you're not in the mood for it most mornings. And just to give some sort of sense of kind of air or mystery in the room, putting on some music in the background,
sure,
can kind of trick you into believing that you're getting there. You know.
How do you feel about tomorrow? Then the movie starts filming. Yeah. We talked about this at the start. If you just joined us, Dark Lies the Island has been made into a movie. I know you've written it, but are you going to be on hand tomorrow when they start filming and that kind of thing, or do you have to just let them at it now?
I leave them at it, I think, at this stage. Sometimes, you know, there have to be very late changes because you might be able to afford to film some scene or something, and you might have to do a quick cut and paste on some kind of a scene. But generally it's kind of, I look in and have a visit at some point in the filming, but you're kind of in the way, really, as the writer on film sets, you know. I've been on short film sets and you say to someone, you're the writer, and it's like you're saying, I'm the electrician's aunt, you know. There's no call for you there, really.
And in terms of book writing. Anything on the horizon that you can mention?
I've a draft of something new, but it's...
All right, we'll not talk about that then.
Yeah, very, 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 very superstitious about talking about new things.
Well, Kevin, thanks for coming in. It's been a pleasure. It was great to have you on the first of this new set of Mystery Train programs.
Very fitting, being from a long line of wagon makers.
A long line of wagons. And I'm glad that you're... I'm glad you were the first guest. And
thanks
for having you. And we're going to finish with some of your Detroit techno dance groove.
It's kind of from that phase of electronic dance music. This is the stuff I'd listen to most now, which is the kind of retro Detroit sort of techno from the late 80s from the great producer Derek May, who was going under the handle Rhythm is Rhythm. And this is probably his most famous iconic piece, Strings of Life.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow at 7 p.m. here on RTE Lyric FM.
You've been listening to a podcast of Mystery Train with John Kelly. Mystery Train hits the rails every Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on 96 to 99 RTE Lyric FM.